Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Miranda July has been making challenging, thought-provoking art for many years. Performance pieces, feature-length films, music videos, short stories, strange mixtapes, you name it, she's pretty much done it. And done it really well. Now Miranda is the author of The First Bad Man. It's her first novel, and it too, not surprisingly, has gotten rave reviews from critics and readers alike. And Miranda July joins me here on Soundcheck. Welcome.
Hi.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
I don't really know how to go about summarizing the book without giving too much away. Would it be fair to say it revolves around a 40-something-year-old woman who is kind of maybe more than the sum of her neuroses, of which there are many?
Right. Yeah, kind of a righteously alone person.
Who ends up not alone, although maybe in a kind of a surprising way.
Right. She has a house guest who's sort of her opposite, a 20-year-old blonde bombshell named Clee.
Mm-hmm. And the sort of journey that they go on together is really kind of an unusual one. I guess given the fact that you've done so many different things, at what point did this idea say to you, I need to be a novel, not a short story, not a film, not a performance art piece? When did that happen?
Well, it happened when I sold the idea of a novel to Scribner and then actually decided that I didn't like that idea, that it wasn't going to be fun to write. This was a number of years ago before I made my last movie, The Future. And it was actually when I was making this movie that I suddenly thought, you know what? I do best with stories that are not directly connected to my life, where there's not a character that I could play, you know, quote unquote. And so that's what I'm looking for. And it was kind of like I had this, you know, like when you're hoping to meet your ideal mate and you're like, let him be tall and intellectual, or, you know, I was like, let it be, you know, a little bit surreal but grounded in reality, but with characters that I couldn't play. You know, like I had this wish list, and then it did come. It came pretty fully formed.
And is Cheryl, our protagonist, is she like the anti-Miranda? Is she your opposite? Is she the yin to your yang?
I wish she was. No, unfortunately, a lot of her hang-ups are my own. I mean, you know, they seem much bigger when you take away all the things that I'm quite able at. but yeah, I mean, that's the joy of it, is to sort of take these things that you lament or are kind of embarrassed by, and in the book I can own them and become righteous about them, and even suggest, like, maybe there's something powerful about them. Mm. Maybe they can enact real change in this character's life.
So among her many problems, she has this kind of clenching in the throat, globus hystericus?
Yeah, it's a real thing.
Yeah. Do you have that?
I think I had it for a moment. That I did get the name from a doctor who diagnosed me with it, although I think it's basically just like holding tension in your throat, which we all, I think a lot of people do.
Yeah. But she has it on a kind of like...
Yeah. If you go on the message boards for globus hystericus, it can be really intense.
Yeah. So there are these many things that make her a kind of a flaky, kind of weird character. But the one of all of them, the one that struck me comes later in the book when she and Clee are talking about... Clee is asking her what her favorite kind of music is, and she doesn't have one. And that, to me, was the moment where I'm like... Oh, now this is really weird.
That got you.
That got me. I was like, how could she not have a favorite kind of music? But, I mean, there are people like that.
Right. She'd never even noticed that her clock radio had a radio aspect to it until Clee started, like, flipping through.
Right.
Yeah, and they land on...
classical music.
Yeah, on a Gregorian chant, what turns out to be a Gregorian chant. And I think she just says, like, this, you know, like she picks this because it's just, you know, not as jangly as all that other.
Right, music. So she says, you know, so Klee is tuning down the dial and going past all this, what she calls jangly and upsetting music.
Yeah.
So all of it is jangly. I mean, but that's not you, is it?
No. I mean, I'm like a sort of former punk, so I mean, there's a lot of music I like that's a little bit upsetting. Yeah.
So they're trying to find their song, and this chant called Deum Verum comes on. Everybody in this book has their idiosyncrasies, their little, you know, eccentricities and stuff. And in your career, you sort of cultivated that image. I mean, we have this tradition of, I know this is going to be an oxymoron, but we have this kind of outsider/maverick tradition in the American arts.
Mm.
An oxymoron because if it's a tradition, then
yeah,
you're not
right.
really a maverick. Where do you... Do you see yourself as coming out of that kind of tradition?
There's something about that that actually seems sort of like male, kind of masculine to me. So it's sort of appealing. I'm like, yes, I would love to be a maverick outsider. But in truth, I think the space that has been given to me and my kind has more been like weird art girl, you know, or something. And that's been consistent throughout my whole life. I mean, I was that person in high school, and I continue to be. And I think the only difference maybe is just sort of sticking with your thing long enough that it kind of accrues its own audience, and like the bullies are kind of like, oh well, whatever, she seems to have a lot of friends actually, you know.
So it's interesting. I mean, as soon as you said that, of course I realized you're right, that maverick thing has been a male thing. You know, you think of Harry Partch, the composer, you know, who rode the rails as a hobo during the Depression, invented his own instruments. Harry Darger, you know, the guy who did the weird drawings and novels while working as a janitor in Chicago or wherever.
I mean, not that there haven't been women, and I like actually that you said that, because maybe this is the, you know, like maybe that's changing, and so for you it's comfortable just to include me.
Well, and I would, you know, I would also include someone like Laurie Anderson, who has moved really easily between the visual arts, the performing arts, music, of course. And, you know, she too has this kind of weird kind of straddling of outsider and also kind of mainstream, you know? As you've done with your films and your short stories and now this novel. And to come back to this kind of kooky, weirdo vibe that we see in the main characters, there is one song that Cheryl knows, sort of, and which she uses as almost like a talisman against the worst of her neuroses. Tell us about finding this song.
Right. I mean, what I'm trying to write about in the book is sort of compulsion and obsession. And she's had that in the past in her life and found ways, sort of repeated phrases that help her get out of it. But she's hit this new thing, which is compulsively imagining that she is all the men in the world being pleasured by her house guest, to put it sort of daintily.
Thank you for that. Preserving our PG rating.
Which is like this, you know, upsetting but erotic compulsion, and she's in talking to her therapist, and they're trying to come up with some phrase or something that can help her get out of it, mm-hmm. That she can repeat, kind of like a mantra, although I don't use that word. It's like something to break the spell. And is it a song? Is there any song she knows? And she does know one song that a girl played in college that she liked. And so the therapist asks her to sing it.
Will you stay in a lover's story? If you stay, you won't be sorry, 'cause we believe in you. Soon you'll grow, so take a chance with a couple of kooks hung up on romancing. Will you stay in a lover's story? If you stay, you won't be sorry, 'cause we believe in you. Soon you'll grow, so take a chance with a couple of kooks hung up on romancing.
Kooks is the name of the song, early song from David Bowie. You know, Bowie wrote that song for his son.
I know. It's interesting. My friend Kayla Marisich emailed that to me after I had had my son and I was writing this book, you know, while I was pregnant and a new mom. And that's why she sent it to me. But it's, you know, it resonated because it is... it's such a kind of heartbreaking story because it's a song. The song is heartbreaking. I mean, just hearing it now, I'm thinking like the whole deal with life is that you can't stay in your parents' story. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
Like that's your great job as a human is to break out of that lover's story and into your own one. And that'll be the job of the child in this book, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, though, we don't know Cheryl's backstory. Like, you know, we come upon her pretty stifled person, and in a way, I feel like she breaks out of whatever was bequeathed to her mm-hmm. in the course of this book.
So she's broken out of her story.
Yeah.
And then there's a little epilogue that kind of scoots yeah. us a little bit down the road. And the idea of motherhood, which is so key to this book, you know, it's a wonderful thing, but it is like an exhausting thing. And there are moments in this book where it just took me back to when, you know, we had our first kid and, you know, uh-huh. the sleepless days and nights where you were literally close to being insane from lack of sleep.
Yeah, I know. I remember taking notes from that time and kind of having a feeling like I'm taking notes from a place that there is not supposed to be a record from. like you're supposed to come out the other side of this not remembering.
So that you'll go and do it again.
Yeah, you'll do it again and you'll tell all your friends to do it. And it's true, while I am now quite sunny on the whole thing, I do value the fact that I wrote it all down and I was able to get a bit of that in there.
So, you know, despite what you said before about, you know, trying to maybe find a character who wasn't sort of you,
mm-hmm.
There is a lot of kind of autobiographical elements in this. And I know that, you know, you've done this, you did this app for a while mm-hmm. where it was a texting app where people would deliver your text in person if they
right.
were in the right location.
Right. It's being relaunched actually in a couple of months.
And, yeah. and you know, Cheryl, our protagonist, has this kind of weird texting relationship with Philip throughout the book.
Uh-huh. Right.
And when finally they get to have the relationship in person, it's like comically disappointing.
Right.
So is this one of the things you learned from that app?
No, I mean, I'd say what the app has in common with the book, and I did conceive of them, or, you know, in the same time period, is an interest in sort of surrogacy and playing roles. And the idea that there might be some, I mean, because when you deliver the message through the app, you don't just deliver the message as a messenger. You deliver it as the person standing in. You're a surrogate for them. So you have to, you know, if I was delivering it to you and I was your wife, Jane, that's probably not her name.
It's not her name, but go ahead.
I'm willing to go
with this little fantasy.
And I'd say, hi, I'm Jane. You know, like I would have to embody Jane. And that's part of the pleasure of it. And throughout this book, people are playing roles and sort of creating intimacy through not being themselves. And that was something I was, you know, it was so rich for me because I come from a place from Berkeley and my particular parents where, you know, the idea of depth versus superficiality is a really, it's a dichotomy that can really like become a tyranny. Mm. So it's very liberating, the idea that not being yourself could actually be profound.
Hip hop has this like ongoing battle with authenticity, you know.
Right.
That's a good word to use. It can be a tyranny of sorts, you
right.
know.
Can right.
be kind of stifling. So Cheryl and her house guest Clee engage in some role playing. Cheryl works at a women's self-defense nonprofit, and they do some enacting of like self-defense videos that they've produced over the years. And again, in this kind of blurring of fiction and reality, you now have a website where we can go and bid on some of the, like the pommel suit
yeah.
that they wear so that, you know, the men in the videos can get beaten up by the women without
right.
getting hurt and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. You can go. The bidding is still going on. And it really varies. Like you can get some items for quite cheap and then some other completely worthless items like a Post-it will sell for like $350. There's no rhyme or reason that I can come up with.
But the Post-it is something you've written. There's a scene in the book where she writes something down on a piece of paper on a Post-it, and you wrote that actually on a Post-it.
Right. It's the handwriting, I guess. But, you know, to me, the value is what it connects to in the book. And each item is packaged in a bag with a quote from the book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always interested in how to kind of invite people into the world of the book in a way that is special because we're herded towards so many things mm-hmm. every day.
And all the money raised through these bizarre little auctions is going to
a charity.
A National Partnership for Women and Families. In addition to all the other things that you've done with film and performance art and short stories and stuff like that, you have found time. You mentioned being a kind of a punk earlier on. You found time to do videos over the years with people like Slater Kinney.
Just Slater Kinney, actually. And
Blonde Redhead, right?
My husband did that and I was in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Your husband is the other Mike Mills, not the REM Mills.
Yeah, the real Mike Mills. Yeah. I mean, quite frankly, you know, I kind of grew up with the Slater Kinney girls. Like, we met when we were 18. So it's more like they just ask me to do something and I mm-hmm. do it, you know.
And do you just do what they tell you, or do you come in as a director and say, I have this idea, why don't I wear this goofy looking gorilla mask?
And it was an old man mask. And in that case, it was Carrie calling me like the day before they needed to have this video out. And she said, actually just texting me, not even calling, just saying, do you have like some video we could loop for this lyric video that needs to come out? And I like looked through my videos and I'm like, no, I have videos of my son. Like, and then I wrote back and I have this old man mask. And I was like, I could put this mask on and kind of dance. Is that fine? And shoot it on my phone. And she's like, great. And I mean, I think the next day or the day after that, it was online and everywhere. And so the word directing, I wouldn't use too heavily there.
Well, if you go online and look up the Slater Kinney song, Bury Our Friends, and see the lyric video, you'll see what Miranda July is talking about. Slater-Kinney. The song is Bury Our Friends. The lyric video consists of pretty much nothing but Miranda July in an old man mask and doing little bit of movement.
Yeah, I found it was better if I moved less. But it's an honor. I mean, it's a great song, and I would do anything for them.
Well, now, you have your own relationship with one of the old punk labels, Kill Rock Stars. The Kill Rock Stars.
Right.
You did some albums for them. Although I wouldn't characterize them as kind of music records, per se.
Oh, right.
Well, how would you describe them?
Sometimes like a sort of radio play or just like performance, you know, albums. There's music on them, but I was they're kind of like scores almost to what I'm doing.
Right. Who did the music?
Different people. Summer Mastis, Donovan Skirvin, you know, the late Donovan Skirvin, actually, sadly. Just friends I knew at the time who, you know, I started out in a band, and ultimately my thing got too weird for the band. And so I had to like break off and find people who are willing to go with my thing.
Did you play an instrument?
No, I never played an instrument. And so I was always stuck singing, which I don't do well either. But the music was so loud that it was kind of hard to tell.
Yeah.
I was a good front person, like I had a lot of energy. But I, you know, I'm a writer also. And so I do like to be on stage. So it was really hard for me up there not to start beginning to craft whole worlds and dialogues.
Yeah.
And
because lyrics often, especially in a 3-minute, 2-minute pop song or punk song, can be very repetitive. The kind of thing as a writer, you would think, well, this is boring. I'm just saying the same thing over and over again. But in a song, it often works.
Right. I mean, you know, I've never been good at lyrics. Like, I think that was the thing. Like, I wanted to perform like a dialogue between like a woman and her doctor or something.
Yeah.
Like,
is it a burning sensation or an itching sensation? Burning. A shooting pain or a dull pain? Shooting. Shooting gun or shooting star? Star. Movie star or rock star? Movie. Movie about a woman or about a tornado? Woman. Starring Glenn Close or starring Uma Thurman? Uma. Uma falls in love or Uma falls ill? Ill. The audience can tell that Uma is ill because her hands shake or her eyes are red. Red eyes. Uma feels a burning sensation or an itching sensation? Burning. A shooting pain or a dull pain? Shooting. Shooting gun or shooting star? Star. Movie star, rock star, movie, movie, movie.
Now, that's going back a few years.
Yeah.
From Miranda July's record, 10 Million Hours a Mile.
Yeah. I mean, for me, that was just, I don't think I've heard that, like, in a really long time. And, you know, it's so, in its twisted, poetic way, it's so autobiographical because I had this eye problem and I had these burning pains in my eyes, and what else did I desperately want to do but make movies, you know? But that wasn't easy to do. What I could do right then was make recordings.
Wow.
So in some ways it's a very literal piece.
So now you've done this novel, The First Bad Man. Is there any kind of thought in the back of your mind that maybe you'll make this into a film?
You know, I loved that idea the whole time I was writing it. I was already like accepting Oscars. I don't even think the person who wrote the book gets an Oscar, but I was there. I was wearing a dress at the Oscars. But now that it's done, it seems obvious that a movie of it isn't going to make it better, and it'll probably make it worse.
So much of the book is interior. So much of the book is inside Cheryl's mind. It's the whole middle. It's hard for me to imagine how
that would play out on screen.
That
would be hard. Yeah.
Have you at any point landed on a medium where you've thought, "Nah, this is my favorite"? I mean, you've done pretty much everything at this point.
Right. Yeah, I don't think it's like that. I mean, sometimes with writing, I think like, well, you know, if things get really bad in terms of the world and conditions and making movies is just a joke, like we're not doing that, people like me aren't doing that anymore, then it's great that I have this fallback that's so cheap. And I do love writing, and it is kind of the underpinning to most of the things I do. But for me, it's the whole life. It's like having a good life that's interesting is the best art. So I'm switching around, not, you know, it's certainly not like a good career move, but it makes for a nice life.
Well, the new book is called The First Bad Man. It is a remarkable story. Thank you so much for sharing the story with us on Soundcheck today. Great to see you.
Thank you.
And if you ever have to go to the school, remember how they messed up this old fool.
Get instant updates from Soundcheck anytime by following us on Twitter at Soundcheck and on Facebook at facebook.com/WNYC Soundcheck. Thanks for listening. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.
Will you stay in my lover's story? If you stay, you won't be sorry, 'cause we believe in you. Soon you'll grow, so take a chance with a couple of kooks hung up on romancing. Will you stay in my lover's story? If you stay, you won't be sorry, 'cause we believe in you. Take a chance with a couple.